This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. Today, we listen to the second half of Reggie's talk on how we cultivate an unmediated relationship with experience through the practice of meditation. He says that ego shuts down the life of experiences through judgment. When we stop judging, the life force becomes free. This talk was given at the 2011 Advanced Meditating with the Body Retreat, held at the Blazing Mountain Retreat Center in Crestone, Colorado.
In traditional Buddhism, it's said that if you weep over the death of somebody, it's because you have too much attachment. If you go to the refrigerator in the middle of the night, it's because you're not dealing with your pain. But what I think is the hunger and the attachment that we have as humans is incredibly sacred. That everything that drives us and motivates us is incredibly sacred. Ultimately, there is no such thing as neurosis, really. There's all these energies that flow through us, and they flow through us in a very unique way as humans, and they're incredibly sacred. And our problem is that we can't be with them, and we can't see the sacredness in them. When an animal dies and the other animals gather around, it's the same thing. We want to live. And the reason we want to live and not die, it's not because of our ego. It's because of the sacredness of life. And we want to live and we want others to live. Through the practice that we do here, we are letting go of all of these limiting judgments and perceptions we have about life. And in the process, the lid is coming off all of us. And the lid means artificially restricting the range of our human experience. We talk a lot about judgmentalism and how important it is not to judge things. Meditation 101, right? Don't judge your practice, just do it. But what judgmentalism is, it's a way of limiting our experience. Because what would happen if we actually regard everything that goes on in us as sacred? Everything that goes on, what would happen? We would lose control over our life. We would be in a place of having to say an unconditional yes to everything in our life that happens and everything in the life of other people. And that's a very terrifying prospect, and so we rather judge things. We rather shrink everything down and delimit the range of acceptable experience. But when we do this work, and when we work with the body, we are dismantling, I know you know this, so I'm not like telling you anything new, but we are dismantling all of that judgmentalism, and we are infinitely extending and opening and expanding the range of our human experience and our experience of the whole world. there's no limit to what we can find. The most ancient cultures have worked with this same process in their own way, and in ways that we can't, you know, we can't go back and do it their way. You know, we're modern people. But it is reassuring to notice in the history of religions that the very, very most historically and technologically simple and earliest people are working with the same issue of saying yes to everything that life is and being nourished by it. You know, when we have an experience that's difficult, such as anxiety, maybe we have an extremely anxious, we wake up very, very anxious, our tendency is to want to put it on things. First of all, we judge it as bad, and then we put it on things. Well, it's because, fill in the blank, it's because, you know, so-and-so, this relationship, that situation, my financial non-status, whatever it may be. But what happens if we don't judge it, and what happens if we don't, if suddenly we realize, wait a minute, it doesn't have anything to do with anything, it's just itself. And then, in a way, you're totally trapped because there's no logic for it, it just is itself. It's an experience. This is what human life is at this moment. It's this extreme anxiety where I look out and everything's vibrating in the world. I look at the sky and it's vibrating with anxiety. What if that's human life at that moment? What if that is what is deepest and most profoundly real that is delivering itself to us? What if there's no room to judge that? We're nourished by it in an incredibly deep way. We're nourished. Our souls are nourished. Our souls are fed. Any time that we're willing to experience life without trying to limit it and trying to control it and trying to narrow it down and make it domestic and acceptable, anytime we're willing to experience with a heart that is that open, our soul, strangely enough, our soul is complete. And I know that, you know, you've experienced that, you know, through the practice. We have moments when the hardest thing in the world, all of a sudden we surrender to it for some strange reason. We just can't hold out anymore. Instead of struggling and fighting, we let all of that go and we're just with it. And then we're free. So that's a very, 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 very important moment, because we see in those moments, which may be few and far between, in those moments we actually see that freedom is possible and a sense of fullness of oneself is possible. In life. And all we need to do is remember that and trust it. That's a hard one for us, because the world itself is going in such a different direction, the conventional world, that we get a lot of contrary messages that, oh, don't trust it, it's not really real, and so on and so forth. But one of the key points in the spiritual path is we have to trust those moments when we actually see how it is. And I think the second thing is that we have to realize that those moments occur to people more and more these days throughout the world. But they have the same problem we do. You know, they have a culture that's telling them to mistrust their own deepest perception, to mistrust their own most subtle inner voice. And the second thing is, most people don't know what to do with it. They don't know what to do with that insight. And, you know, we can criticize the sort of New Age spirituality, and I think, you know, there are a lot of problems, a lot of confusion. But, you know, in many cases, the initial intuition or inspiration is accurate. find a lot of the people who are out there on the circuit, so to speak. But the thing is, people don't really know what to do with it. They don't know how to translate what they see into a transformed human life. And Buddhism, and I think particularly Vajrayana Buddhism, and within Vajrayana Buddhism especially, the somatic practices of Vajrayana Buddhism do know how to do it. You know, they do know how to transform the longing for fulfillment and the longing for freedom and the glimpse, you know, momentary glimpses of its possibility. They know how to translate that into a transformed human life so that your life becomes that. One of my friends once asked Trungpa Rinpoche, "Do you have glimpses of nirvana?" And he said, no, actually I have glimpses of samsara. Meaning that he had changed, because he wasn't that way. I mean, people think, oh, he's a great teacher, he was always that way. He wasn't that way. When he was very young, he was a pretty confused person. He was confused. He didn't know what was going on. He was this, found himself in this religious tradition and was being brought up by all these men. And he missed his mother terribly, you know, and he didn't know what the hell was going on. And then he began to realize that a lot of the tradition around him was bogus. You know, when he was 10 or 11, he started to realize, this is bullshit. You know, these people are trying to turn me into some kind of parrot, some kind of puppet to go out and raise money for their monastery. And so he was not in good shape. And he had a couple of teachers who really encouraged him to practice and who taught him and told him, it's up to you, you don't have to work on yourself. We're not going to do this for you. And they were the first ones who said, we're not going to do it for you. And he had been in a mediated situation, you know, where his teacher said, well, we have the answers and you just do it our way and you're going to be fine. Look at us. Well, he did look at them and he realized they weren't fine. And actually, they didn't know what was going on. So these two people came along, Chamgen Kontrol and Kenpo Gangchar, who were his two main teachers, and they said, you have to do it yourself. You know, you've got the practice, but nobody's going to do it for you. You know, either you do it or you don't do it. And they said, take a look. I mean, take a look at the people who haven't done it. I mean, they've got the teachings, but they don't practice, and they don't do it. You can do it if you want to. And he took it seriously, and he became a different person, really. I mean, in some sense, he was the same person, but he was a person who always had one foot in the depth, and it made him helpful to others. And that's, I think, the message of this lineage that is unique, or at least unusual, that we, each one of us here in this shrine room, can change and transform into the person that we want to be. And that the person that we want to be is that is the life force expressing itself in us. Can we have the courage to trust our own deepest desires? Can we have the courage to trust what we long for the most? What we discover, we wake up in the middle of the night and there's this incredible, burning, painful longing and wanting and yearning. Can we trust that? And are we willing to sacrifice our life for it? You know, the interesting thing is that sacrificing one's life for life, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Are we willing to let the life that is in us have its way and be as abundant as it wants to? And this tradition is about that and nothing else. So whether we feel comfortable identifying ourselves as Buddhist or not, whether we want to be even identified as a spiritual person, it doesn't matter. I mean, that is really just strictly individual preference and karma. I mean, some people feel comfortable one way, some people feel comfortable the other. But the fundamental mission is the same. I feel very, very strongly for all people. It's to let go of trying to limit our life and having enough trust in life to surrender into the fire of experience. And that's what we're doing here. And each one of us has our own, you know, each one of us is the Buddha in some sense. Each one of us is Trungpa Rinpoche. You know, truly, there is no difference. There are no higher people. The sacred reality of life is in each one of us in an absolutely pure and powerful way. And it's everything is about our own life. And, you know, sometimes people say, well, that sounds kind of narcissistic. You know, my response is, I'm really sorry you see it that way. I'm really sorry that you think honoring your own life is narcissistic. In fact, it's the opposite. The more we honor the life that's in us, the more we have to let go of our narcissism, which is our sort of self-congratulatory, self-protective, self-absorbed way of being. The more we honor the life in us, the more naked we have to become, the more we have to open to this world and to what is what we're called to. I've been thinking, as I do, you know, actually quite often about Jesus' situation. He was, of course, very, very, you know, he was one of the most interesting of the Israeli prophets, Jewish prophets, and there were many before him, and there were quite a few after, and they're still around. And these are very unusual people. They're people who are, they become transparent to the ultimate in a certain particular kind of way. And in particular, they have such a strong sense of that we are responsible for the world, which is something Buddhism hasn't really, hasn't done well with. But the prophets of ancient Israel were, you know, number one, you have to touch the ultimate, and number two, you have to protect the world. And it's not good enough if you have your own inner freedom and the world is filled with suffering and oppression and injustice. That's not good enough. And his thing was, you know, Jesus' thing was, he didn't quite get it totally. He had some ideas, and he was politically he kind of realized the situation that he was in, but he kind of didn't, and he made some big mistakes in terms of working with his community and put them in the path of harm, you know. And I mean, he had more of a journey to make, but his thing was always, you surrender, you have to surrender to life. And you know, if you read what he said about his father, it's not about his father, it's about the life force itself. You know, there was a very much a male-female thing in Jewish tradition, and his discussions and his teachings were about the life force, and you have to surrender to the sacred. And for him it meant being crucified. But what I think happened was, his crucifixion was the last stage in the journey. And, you know, through that unbelievably horrific process, he let go of the last vestiges of his narcissism. And his energy was able to be released. And, you know, that's a very extreme example, but it shows how the journey, it's open-ended and there are no guarantees. But the thing is, we do become in the service of what is most sacred, and that is what we want as humans. That's all we want, ultimately, no matter who we are.
download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Kechog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.